One thing I want to take the time to do is quickly go through this, some faster than others, but give you an overview of what we've done in Florida and the direct impact of this kind of change, because the umbrella around any law or policy, technical assistance guideline, PONGs, of course, technology envelops everything, it seems like anymore for sure. So I want to go through real quick with you what the implications were for Florida when we made an adjustment to the law related to perinatal infection and reporting. Everybody understands in this room, and I don't need to repeat the historical framework and landmark publications involving STIs and pregnancy. A lot of these studies are very specific to pathogens, their treatment efficacy studies. The cohort often were in clinic settings and multiple clinic environments. I think that's important. That's the historical framework. If we're looking at things as an evolving process, we have the foundation from which we now need to begin to build from these valuable historical frameworks, and that is that if we look forward and project where we want to be, there are broader implications involved here, and we can explore lots of opportunities around automated links to data sets from diverse groups, because data storage is all over the place. The key is getting this tied together in a fashion that's manageable and usable. We can explore opportunities around standards of care that drive policy, that inform decisions, that help decision makers at the state level. All of this and everything around that is important, but the critical thing is that we're driven by our very important goal of improving perinatal health outcomes. And just a side note, 3% of all the infants born in Florida were delivered to women who had an STD during the pregnancy in 2005. Now, it comes to new law and new code. Of course, you know there's a hierarchy here. The law is what gives us the authority to do the business we do in public health. The rule or the Florida Administrative Code in our particular case gives us the ability to granulate what that law dictates in terms of conditions to be reported, how we're going to follow up, specific to providers and laboratories. And then below that, of course, is the policy that feeds off of that. And down below that, at an even more granular level, is the implementation through technical assistance guidelines. What we did is we took on a full rewrite of the Florida Administrative Code, but in order to do that, we superseded it by some changes to the actual statutes. Some of these were the fact that we rewrote the Florida statute section on blood testing of pregnancy, broadening that, requiring the practitioner to inform the woman that the testing that would be taking place, and retain the authority, of course, of the department to specify the particular conditions. Now we move down to the administrative code section. Here's where an opportunity came about where Dr. Schmidt led this drive to fully rewrite this code and incorporate very critical changes like requiring the requirements around testings in the first and third trimesters, routine testing in chlamydia, gonorrhea, hepatitis, HIV, syphilis. You know, I won't bother to read this all to you. But it also requires some documentation on the birth and fetal death certificates of infection and treatment events. I want you to keep that in mind as we go forward, because that's another data source that you can tap using technology. Now, just as an overview, we know that this is the way things have always worked. Everybody collects a lot of paper, writes a lot of paper. Usually it was up to the old scribe to transcribe this, uses abacus, and then he puts out all these wonderful reports. Really not much changed in the world in the pre-network days. It's just that the abacus was replaced by a chip in a computer, and the poor monk was replaced by a piece of software resident on a computer. But still, all that paper flowed into that system and had to be input. Now, the whole point of this incredible slide, okay, was not to just put a lot of junk up here, but to give you a sample, really, of what the modern world has become. I say this humbly because the Internet has provided an opportunity for us to all understand the wealth of information that's available to us, and now it's a matter of managing information rather than pushing paper into software. All of these pieces of information are stored in different places. The key is getting them into the different repositories and allowing systems, in the case of Florida, the PRISM system taps all of these repositories, takes that information, and then disseminates that information and makes it available down to the people providing care, the DIS, the medical staff, things of that nature, and then, of course, we report it out. What we're doing is making a very important change here. We're going away from paper, which used to be very arduous and create, you know, for every element that's collected, it's a workload issue. It is always another piece of paper. It's another checkbox. It's more time and resources that are allocated or taken away from your DIS and the delivery of services in order to collect more data. The modern implication of this kind of thing is that that data is resident. And let me just, off away from the slide, give you a good example. With the one of the major changes under the rule was the requirement in Florida for electronic laboratory reporting. Okay, we've seen this a lot. There's some great posters out there. You ought to see the one from Michigan that talks about electronic laboratory reporting and some of the impacts on some of the variables you'd think would improve. But my point is, when we made it electronic lab reporting required, that required hospitals to begin reporting. When I started meeting with the hospitals, let me explain to you what they wanted to do and which we're planning to do in May. Using technology, they want to open up their hospital systems in a direct, secured connection to the Department of Health. They want live feeds coming out of those hospital laboratories into the Department of Health. The key for them is to cut off the need to have somebody sitting there on the phone saying, oh, by the way, I want you to know we're giving you a positive case of syphilis, and in case you want to follow that up, that human being jobs goes away. Printing all of this paper and reporting it to whatever health department goes away. But look at the opportunity that creates as well. If you have a live direct feed from the Department of Health to the hospital, not only do you have access to medical records within that hospital, you have access to treatment records, laboratory records, important information that might be coming out of the emergency room. This is the bi-directional world that we can attain by using technology properly in support of changes to the rules and to the laws that are applicable to disease reporting. What we're looking to do in Florida is to fully integrate electronic lab reporting into PRISM. PRISM is our surveillance application. It's not important. There's a ton of applications across the country that you can look at, but the point is that that integration means that that information comes from the source to the application without a human being anywhere along that path, increasing the risk of error or interjecting error along that pathway. What we're trying to do is, what we have done is we've integrated HARS into the application. Now our DIS staff are fully aware of who's infected or has been reported by the HIV program in terms of the cases that they're working. We're also working toward interfacing the application with vital statistics databases. Now that's to say that that software can talk to that database, search for people, and pull their information back. That saves the DIS running over to vital statistics with a little piece of paper and sitting there combing through all of these records and then writing down this information and running back to the computer to input it, much like you saw with the monk and the scribe and the abacus. This bi-directional communication, to me, is what's key. When you make changes to rules and laws and you have the technology to support it, some interesting things are going to start to happen, hence the 200% increase in the detection of STIs and perinatal STIs. In the pre-modern world, of course, we were looking at about a 1.3% of all infants born in Florida were delivered to women who had an STD reporting during pregnancy or at delivery. When I say post-modern, post-deployment, which would be last January, February of 2007, we've jumped to 5.5%. Okay, we have a broader range of infections that are being reported. We've got a lot more information flowing through. And let me just pause for a moment to give you some indicator of why this might be happening, because I don't want everyone to think that all of a sudden the porn house has had a tremendous impact on pregnancy. What's happening is, traditionally, Florida, maybe like your areas, your major sources of information for positive laboratory tests were probably coming for a long time out of your clinics, out of the public health laboratories. There was a transition in Florida that slowly took place where that began to decrease, and more of the positive laboratory reports of infection were coming out of private laboratories. Well, fancy this, private laboratories actually serve people with insurance, and because they like to get their payments for the billing that they submit. So you suddenly have a window, a view into a world that public health may not have seen before, and that is this whole private sector area, which we hadn't known a lot about, and there was probably, I would dare say from what we found, a little bit of underreporting going on. Here's some observations just of interest, if it if it, just to tantalize you a little bit. Most of the infections, of course, were later in pregnancy. There's no surprise, of course, that's what the slide will tell you about the chlamydia rate. The age distribution, you're not going to be too surprised about. Prenatal care status was known in almost half of those. 84% received appropriate treatment, which is great news. Ethnicity distribution remained consistent over time, but race distribution sort of shifted and reported with higher percentage of unknown. So let me pause for a moment and tell you another implication of technology. In the world where we were controlling all of the input to the laboratories and the state labs were reporting the information back, we had a lot of race data that was coming through. In the world of the private sector, and LabCorp goes out and cuts a deal with your provider, that provider's not going to sit there and scribe out the race, the ethnicity, the sex, and the whole demographics of them. They're going to put on a patient ID number and boom, shoot that order off to LabCorp. LabCorp's going to process it, shoot it back, and voila, when it comes time to report from LabCorp's perspective, you got a name and an ID. And so you should expect, I'm telling you from experience, a decrease in the content in terms of race in particular. Now, of course, everybody's laws are very specific, but I would warn you to anticipate some decrease in that area, especially in the reporting from those private laboratories. The baby status was known in about 90%, 92%. 83.4% experienced a live birth, which is, again, great news. 2.2% experienced a live birth, but that was followed by death. This information was coming from the vital statistics information that we received. 38% of them identified as serofast, likely serofast, previously adequately treated, uncertain if followed adequately per the protocol. The policy implications, here's the key. When you open up the faucet and you start getting the information in this world, the question really becomes for every program, given our financial situations, given the legal obligations that we have, is how do you shape policy to handle all of this information? So, you know, it's all well and good that we've had a 200% increase in detection of STIs in pregnant women, but the question then becomes, what's your obligation with that? What is it we can do with the resources you have to adequately ensure that these women are treated properly? And more importantly, if you've noticed, I'll give you a little anecdote. In the application that we use, when the women are reported as pregnant, let's say for a chlamydial infection early in pregnancy, this pregnancy status or their record remains open on a task list until the estimated delivery date. Let me tell you why we did that. The reason we did that was we found that once we got the woman reported as positive for chlamydia, for example, she got adequate treatment. Normally, the procedure for the STD program would be, okay, we're done with that one. She's out of the system. She's off back to the house. But the question becomes, ultimately, if you're not following up on all of your chlamydias, is how in the world did she get infected? And if you send her back in the world with treatment, don't you think she's going to get reinfected? So the question then becomes, how do you handle treating the disease around the individual during that pregnancy to ensure the healthy outcome for the baby? A lot of work remains around this. What's happened to us was an alignment of the stars, really. With the distribution of a new application, that was a bit of a shock. With the incorporation of electronic laboratory reporting within that application, believe you me, you can talk to any of the Florida staff, they'll tell you that was a shock. Because, as another side note, you know how when paper comes in the office, you can control that workflow? You can stamp date that bad boy. You can separate them into different sections. And you know if you got to that stack today, that's great. But if you didn't get to these other two stacks for a couple of days, well, you know, time goes on. You may not get back to them. In the world of electronic reporting, it comes into your face, onto that computer, and it doesn't go away. There's no round file on the PC. So the thing is, the old school ways of handling things sort of go out the window. Now you're in a world where nothing's going away until you do something with it. And that was a difficult adjustment for the field staff because that's not something they're accustomed to. And there is some difficulties around that. But we are getting better, and we're going to get better with it. And we're going to learn from this experience to start driving policies more with informed decisions based around the evidence that the data presents for us, and hopefully that will drive bigger and better things for the program.